Big Bob and his pals spread out just before they reached the town limits. They reined up and dismounted, quickly filling their calloused hands with their guns. They began advancing slowly into town, behind the buildings and straight up the boardwalks on both sides of the long street. The Noonans and the 44 hands decided they wanted no part of the old mountain men. But for most of those who had lain in failed ambush for Falcon, it was too late. Parnell ran out and the mountain men drilled him. The impact and bullets turning the man around and around in the street, his body jerking from the hot slam of the 44 and 45 slugs. A cowboy hit the air, running all out to where their horses were hitting. Several others of the Noonan clan and of the 44 hands were right behind him.
Damn, Falcon. You can't even go into town to count your money without getting into trouble, can you, boy?
Certainly don't appear that way, Bob.
Me and the boys kind of figured you'd get into a fight. We decided to follow you.
Damn good thing you did, too.
You sure left a passel of dead and wounded laying about. They must have irritated you something fierce.
They tried to ambush me.
Yeah, that pissed me off, too.
I count 8 dead and 2 wounded. One of them was dragging a busted leg and crawling off. I let him go.
I think that's the one called Sonny. Dale's in the hotel lobby. He might live. There's another called Penrod.
Penrod?
Oh, that's his name. I think he's related to the Noonans, but I'm not sure.
The doctor and the undertaker, newly arrived in town, were mighty busy, moving from body to body.
I feel in need of a drink, but not in the palace.
I was in there briefly. Those, ladies were not entirely pleasant to the eye.
Only one of them's good looking. Her name's Lily, and she runs a whole stable of gals. I've been knowing her for now on 15 years.
You poke her every now and then, Bob?
My poking and who I poke it to ain't none of your damn business, Dan.
I feel in need of a poke myself. That's the reason I was asking.
Well, you can go ask her if you can poke her, but Lily ain't cheap. And she's still right smart of a mover, too. You better get cinched down tight when you climb on board. Be sure to grab hold of something, because she can throw you.
Falcon walked on up the boardwalk toward the bank building. There would be no work done this day at the ranch. But he doubted there would be any further trouble in town, not once the survivors of the failed ambush got back to home range and spread the word. Falcon spent an hour at the bank, dealing with Willard and one of his tellers. He made some arrangements for some of his money to be spent, mainly setting up through the bank lines of credit for a half a dozen small farmers and several of the smaller ranchers. Then he walked over to the general store and found several nice shirts that would fit him, and much to his surprise, a suit coat that would also fit him. He bought a pair of breeches and changed clothes in the rear of the store. Then he bought the last hat in stock that was in his size, and in a style he didn't really like. He took his dirty clothes over to the laundry and cleaners to have them washed and pressed. Big Bob Marsh approached Falcon, a smile on his face.
The mayor of the town done looked me up. When the trouble's over, he wants me to be the marshal of this town. I told him I would if I could have Stumpy as my deputy. He said that'd be just fine with him.
Falcon shook his hand.
Congratulations. What's Stumpy think about all this?
Oh, I ain't told him yet, but he's been making noises about it being time for us all to be thinking of settling down somewheres. He'll go along with it.
The work's just about done at the ranch for sure. Cattle are on good graze, and by the time winter gets here, John will have several permanent hands hired. How about Puma?
Oh, he'll head back to the mountains and that damn cat of his. He ain't gonna farm, and he ain't gonna settle near no town. He done made that clear. He'll die up in the high country. Hell, that's what he wants to do. I think he's got a right to do it.
How about the rest of the boys? What they gonna do?
Well, they're gonna stick around and farm them parcels of land you give out. I kind of figured they would. Well, it's time for us to be thinking of warm fires and soft beds. Ain't none of us got that many more years ahead of us. Well, I gotta go find Stumpy and tell him the news. I can't wait to see his face.
Those N/N and 44 boys might come back, Bob. I can't shake a bad feeling that fell on me a few minutes ago. You pass the word for the boys to be careful.
Will do, Falcon.
As Big Bob walked away, Falcon consulted the clock in the bank window.
It was just mid-morning. Plenty of time for the N/N and 44 riders to reach home range, inform their friends what had taken place in town, and return en masse. The feeling that the Noonans and the 44 bunch would do just that would not leave Falcon. And Falcon's men were going to do a bit of celebrating. They would stay in town all day, more than likely. Falcon looked up the street. The farmers he had met along the way into town were just arriving in their wagons, wives, kids, and all. Falcon spotted a young boy of about 12 sitting on the boardwalk and approached him, giving him a couple of dollars to situate himself on the edge of town on one of the low hills and keep watch.
You see riders coming, boy. You run find me and warn me, all right?
You betcha, Mr. McAllister. You can count on me.
Falcon got himself a table at the rear of Rosie's Cafe and checked his guns, all four of them. He loaded them up full while he drank his coffee and ate his huge wedge of pie. He had seen Dan Carson go into the palace in search of Lily. Big Bob and Stumpy would be off together somewhere in town making plans about when they became lawmen. Mustang was in the farm implement store talking about plows and such. Wildcat was with him. Puma Parley was wandering around town somewhere. Falcon had not seen the man he suspected of being a U.S. Marshal. He had ridden out of town earlier that morning, the stableman had told him. He had him a bedroll and supplies for a couple of days with him. The minutes ticked slowly by and became an hour, then 2 hours. Falcon sat in Rosie's and drank coffee and waited. Shoppers had returned to the streets of the town, visiting and gossiping and shopping. The cafe began filling up, and Falcon paid for his coffee and stepped out onto the boardwalk. The dark feeling of danger had intensified within him. He felt certain showdown was imminent, and it would be a bloody one. He was sure of that. More farmers and small ranchers had arrived in town with their families. Many of them would make a day of it in town and were taking rooms at the hotel and the boarding house to spend the night. Falcon walked down to the livery to check on his horse. Someone had tossed some loose dirt over the bloody spots on the livery floor. He left the livery and walked outside of town and climbed the low hill. The young boy smiled up at him.
I ain't seen a thing, Mr. McAllister, but I'm keeping my eyes open.
Good boy. You keep sharp, and there'll be a couple more dollars in it for you.
Yes, sir.
Falcon walked slowly back to town, his thoughts dark. The feeling of impending danger had grown stronger. More people had arrived in town, and Falcon wondered why so many people were coming into town to shop on a weekday. He watched with a feeling of dismay as John Bailey and his family came riding up the main street. Kip and the cook and the extra hand John had hired, a local young man still in his late teens, were not with him. They had stayed back at the ranch, taking care of odds and ends. Angie, Martha, and Jimmy were in the wagon, John on horseback.
Damn. Something the matter, Brother McAllister?
Falcon turned. Reverend Watkins was standing there, all spiffed up in his best suit.
You're mighty dressed up this day, preacher.
I'm waiting for Miss Terry and her family. There's a box supper at the church social this evening. Didn't you know?
Now Falcon remembered John and Martha talking about it. That's why so many people were flocking into town.
It slipped my mind, preacher. Lots of people coming in?
Oh, nearly the entire population of this end of the county will be here. Every room at the hotel and at Mrs. Deacon's boarding house is already taken. People will be sleeping in tents, under their wagons. We're going to have a lovely service at the church. You will be there, Mr. McAllister?
I'm sure. Excuse me, Reverend.
Falcon walked off, shaking his head. Reverend Watkins and Terry Gilman. Good Lord, what a pair. Falcon smiled at the thought as he walked away. Well, stranger things had happened, he supposed. But offhand, he couldn't think of any.
Maybe I'd just been imagining the danger. Letting my imagination run away in my head.
But he didn't believe that for a minute. Noonan and Stegman and their hired guns were coming to town. It wouldn't make any difference to them how many innocent people caught a bullet, men, women, or kids. And it wouldn't make a whole lot of difference if Falcon and his boys rode out of town back to the ranch. Noonan and Stegman would just wait until the next time he came into town. Falcon was beginning to see Noonan's plan now, or he guessed it might be the rancher's plan. Noonan just might have in mind subduing the townspeople, kicking them back into submission by a huge show of force, showing them he was boss, and by God, that's the way it was going to be from now on. The more Falcon thought about it, the more convinced he became that he was right. Today just happened by accident, and it fit right into Noonan's plans. But someone had known about it. The new hand knew of Falcon's plans. Falcon had been currying his horse late yesterday afternoon, and the young man had asked him point blank if he was going somewhere. Falcon hadn't given it a second thought. He just told him about his planned trip into town today. The hired hand had ridden out shortly after that and hadn't returned until long after dark. It had to be him. Falcon would have a little chat with young Mr. Lewis when he got back. That is, if Lewis ever returned to the Rocking Horse. If he had any sense, he wouldn't. Falcon turned to look in the direction of the N/N and the 44 ranches. They were coming. He was sure of it. He just didn't know when. He went in search of his crew and one by one told them of his suspicions.
You think maybe we should all head back to the ranch?
Then they'd tear up the town just for spite. Perhaps kill or injure some people just for the hell of it. No, we'll stay. We're a thin line, but with any kind of luck, we can make a difference.
No, that church social couldn't have come at a worse goddamn time. You really think young Lewis was spying on you?
Has to be him. Couldn't be anyone else.
Is there anyone in this town we can count on size John Bailey?
Damn few. Besides, most of them I've seen aren't wearing a gun.
I've got me an idea. When them hired gun hands come busting into town this time, let's us finish it once and for all.
You got a plan?
Yep. Hot lead. That there's the best plan I can think of.
Hell, Mustang. There might be 50 or 60 riders coming after us.
The more the merrier. We'll make us a real party of it.
Yeah, I like that idea. More targets we got, the more likely we are to hit something.
Falcon looked at each of his men. There was no fear in any of them. He slowly nodded his head in agreement.
All right, boys. Did y'all bring extra guns with you?
Sure we did. We kind of figured there might be a real shooting party here in town.
How are we going to handle this? We got to have some sort of plan.
I got an idea. It ain't real original, but it's something them no-count sure won't be expecting, I betcha.
Dan hunkered down by the side of the boardwalk and drew a line in the dirt with his finger.
Here's what I got in mind. Now, this here's the town limits, where them gunnies will be coming in, hell bent for leather. So here's where we'll be.
Mr. Bailey, get together as many men as you feel will stand firm and keep the people inside the church.
Boyle's coming to a head today, isn't it, boy?
That's the way I got it figured, John. They could come busting in here any time, all of them.
Young Lewis handed in his walking papers right after you left, Falcon. He was already packed up and ready to go. Is he tied up in all this?
I think he was spying for Noonan or Stegman, reporting back to him.
I never did totally trust that kid. Only hired him as a favor to his ma.
Forget him, John. He's nobody. When word of his treachery gets around the county, he won't be able to get a job cleaning out privies.
You can bet I'll personally see to that. You want me to pass the word to everybody about the raid?
No, it might not happen. I want you and some of those you can trust to get your rifles and throw up a line of defense around this church and grounds. If any of those bastards get close, put some lead in them. It's me they want anyway. They might just leave the townspeople alone.
I don't think so. I think Noonan and Stegman want to put the buffalo in on everybody. Look yonder, boy. There's Miles and his family coming into town to socialize. We can count on him now. My, my, don't Miss Terry look mighty sweet all gussied up in a dress.
I never saw her in a dress before this.
Tell the truth, I ain't seen her in one in years. Not since her ma pulled up stakes and went back east.
The men watched as Terry climbed down from the buckboard and walked over to Angie.
Oh, Lord. Here it comes.
No, now, just wait a minute. I think we may have a mending of ways here.
The two women chatted for a moment, then embraced. When they pulled back, both of them took out their handkerchiefs and dabbed at their eyes. Then they took hands and walked off together, chatting and smiling.
Well, I'll be damned.
It's gonna be all right, boy. Yes, sir, it's gonna be just fine.
Reverend Watkins joined the two young women and put his arm around Terry for just a moment. She smiled up at him.
I don't believe it.
Oh, yeah. Martha heard that the preacher made a formal call on Miles to ask permission to come calling on his daughter. He said yeah, and they've been an item ever since.
Reverend Watkins and Terry Gilman?
Boy, if you could only see the look on your face, it's priceless.
Falcon took off his hat and scratched his head.
I've got to say that now I've seen it all.
I better go see some of the men. You going to be around the church, Falcon?
No. Me and the boys will be going into town, waiting for the action to start. Dan had him a pretty good plan, I think. We'll see how it works out. It's a simple plan, and that's why I like it.
I hope it works.
Me too. I'll see you around, John.
Falcon went back to the livery and got his rifle. He hid it under the dress shop. He took two of the pistols he'd taken from the dead and wounded in the earlier fight and hid them. Then he filled up a bandolier with 44 rounds and slung it over his shoulder and across his chest. His friends had stuffed their pockets full of spare cartridges. He was ready. Now came the hardest part, the waiting. The noon hour passed and Falcon and his men ate a hearty meal at the cafe. The festivities at the church were supposed to get underway at mid-afternoon. Already, people were finishing up their shopping and heading in that direction. John Bailey had quietly alerted about a dozen of the men, and they had loaded up their rifles and tucked them out of sight, but in handy places. They all knew what to do when trouble started. If Noonan and Stegman tried to attack the church and the grounds around it, they would run into a hail of gunfire from men who were familiar with gunfire and knew their rifles as well as they knew the backs of their hands. Falcon put the church social out of his mind as he watched the shop owners shut down for the day, close at about 3 or 4 hours early so they could get ready for the social. Big Bob walked up to stand under the awning where Falcon stood and thought.
I just heard that Noonan that was hanging on just died over to Doc's office.
Dale?
Yeah, I think that's what the man called him. Yeah, that's right, Dale. Yeah, belly shot he was. I got me a notion we ought to finish this little war today, Falcon. Me and the boys done talked it over. Them damn crazy hired guns is either going to surrender or they's going to die. One of the two. We all agree that there ain't going to be no other option open to them.
Suits me.
I want this to be a nice little peaceful town when they pin the badges on me and Stumpy. Handle a drunk every now and then. Maybe settle some family arguments every so often. But no shooting. Me and Stumpy gonna get us a nice little house of peace and live quiet-like.
Tired of rambling, Bob?
I'm getting mighty weary of it, yeah. Stumpy, too.
Then it's time to light for a spell.
Big Bob hauled out a watch about the size of your average clock and clicked open the lid.
They'll be coming shortly now. I feel it in my bones. Your boy up yonder on the hill will be standing up and waving and hollering in a few minutes.
You sure, huh?
Falcon hitched at his gun belt and made no other comment about Big Bob's premonition. He'd been raised around old mountain men, and he knew how finely honed their sixth sense was. They had lived their entire lives on the sharp edge of danger, and their senses were twice that of any ordinary man. Dan Carson walked up and paused for a moment. He wore 2 six-shooters in leather, had 2 more tucked behind his gun belt, and another stuck down behind his belt at the small of his back.
Them old boys will be coming in pretty soon now, I reckon. My blood is beginning to run hot. I expect we better get ready to greet them.
Puma walked up.
Jenny's here.
A damn cat of yours is here in town?
Yep, I can feel her near.
Well, wait a minute, but you ain't seen her?
I don't have to see her. I can sense when she's near to me. But I didn't come over here to jaw about Jenny. Them raiders is on the way.
You keep that damn cat away from me, Puma. You hear me?
She ain't gonna bother you none. Relax. But I figure she's been real close by all the time. I've been getting some messages from her.
There ain't no goddamn way no goddamn Puma can send no human being no goddamn messages. I swear, Parley, the older you get, the crazier you get.
Falcon furtively looked all around him, thinking he might see Jenny skulking about the now nearly deserted town. Then he caught himself and felt rather foolish. He had to agree with Big Bob. Jenny was more than likely hundreds of miles away, and she certainly wasn't sending Puma any messages.
Yep, she's here all right.
Oh, the hell with you, Puma.
I seen Miles Gilman. He was squiring around that farm woman, Mrs. Carter. He sure was lovey-dovey. I reckon that's getting some serious.
Yeah, and Terry and Reverend Watkins is seeing one another. I tell you what, there's some strange happening taking place around this part of the country.
For a fact. And there's gonna be some more things changing in a few minutes.
What are you talking about?
Them raiders is almost here.
Falcon looked up at his boy on the hill. The boy was still sitting, staring out at the road that led to town, making no frantic signals to warn Falcon of any approaching riders.
Yep, I do believe you're right, Stumpy.
I can sense them gun hands getting closer for effect. I figure about 20 minutes and we'll be shooting.
You're right, boys. They're almost here.
Oh, now come on, guys. The boy up on the hill hasn't made a move to signal us. Now, he can see for miles.
Oh, them raiders ain't coming to his side yet, but they'll be plain to him in a few minutes. You just hold your water for a minute or so, you'll see.
Speaking of holding your water, I reckon I better go shake the dew off my delicate flower before we has to go into action. It's uncomfortable having to pee and shoot at the same time.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's find us a privy real quick. We don't want to miss out on none of the fun.
The two men wandered down the alley. Falcon watched them go and shook his head in disbelief at their warning about the N/N and 44 riders approaching. Puma had already walked across the street to take his position next to the far boardwalk.
I reckon we best get ready for some gun smoke, fellas. For troubles are coming, for sure.
Falcon looked up at the hill. The boy was sitting, staring out at the big empty, making no signals toward town.
You told that boy that when trouble starts to stay up yonder and keep down, didn't you, Falcon?
Yeah, he knows to belly down and stay clear.
Good. I'd like this little fracas to end without having a single local getting hurt.
That there boy on the hill will be jumping up and down any minute. You'll see.
Oh, shit. You guys are having fun with me, that's all.
Big Bob and Dan returned from their visit to the privy.
I reckon we all be best getting set for some action. You boys ready to let him bang?
Let's get set then.
Falcon lifted his eyes to the hill. The boy was standing up, waving his arms frantically.
Well, I'll just be damned.
Told you.
Wildcat stepped off the boardwalk into the street. The seven men spread out across the wide main street of town. Puma, Mustang, Wildcat, Big Bob, Stumpy, Dan, and finally Falcon. Upon spotting the seven men, the huge gathering of hired guns reined up at the edge of town and let the dust settle and their horses blow.
Must be 50 of them, at least. And another bunch coming in behind that one.
Yeah, but it's smaller. That'll be the bunch that Noonan and Stegman will be riding with.
Get ready. They're gonna be coming up the street straight at us in a few seconds. You boys all know what to do. As soon as we empty the lead saddles, head for cover. Godspeed, fellas.
The mounted mob put the spurs to their horses and lunged forward, galloping up the street toward the thin line of men. When they got within good pistol range, seven men each jerked 2 6 guns from the left. The 20 saddles were emptied in a matter of seconds. Wounded men were crawling around in the dirt of the street, most of them getting trampled on by the horses that had been galloping directly behind them. When the dust settled, Falcon and the mountain men were nowhere in sight, and the horsemen were trapped in the center of the street. Suddenly, Falcon and three of his men opened up from one side of the street, while the three other mountain men opened up from the other. Less than half of those who had arrogantly charged Falcon and his friends managed to get their horses turned around and gallop back out of town, and many of them were wounded. The street was filled with the dead, dying, and badly wounded. Falcon and his men had not suffered even the tiniest of scratches. Stegman was horrified at the carnage he was witnessing in the street, but Noonan was outraged.
Dismount! Dismount, go after those bastards on foot and kill them! Do it!
A mob of hired guns spread out and began slowly working their way up both sides of the street, front and back of the businesses. There were Noonan and Stegman brothers and other relations that stretched throughout the family tree. For many of them, this would be the last fight. Their blood would stain the streets and alleys and boardwalks and businesses of the small western town in Wyoming. Falcon came up face to face with a gun hand and shot him twice. Just as Big Bob lined up a paid gunny in his sights and blew him to hell. Dan Carson stood in the rear doorway of a building and waited until a gun slick walked up. Then he shot him in the head. Mustang stepped out of a building and blew one of Noonan's cousins out of one boot. The man was dead before he stretched out on the ground for the last time.
Hey you, ugly bastard, behind you!
The gun slick whirled around and Puma gave him two 45 rounds in the chest. Wildcat emptied one pistol into a knot of hired guns and sent two to the ground, mortally wounded. Run! The other three jumped for cover and scrambled out of sight. A man staggered out from between two buildings, half his face gone and blood dripping from the terrible wound.
Jenny got him! I told y'all she was close by!
What the hell happened to Dick?
I don't know, but half his face is missing!
Falcon McAllister, you son of a bitch!
Falcon stayed between two buildings, pressed up into a doorway.
You played hell for a fact, but this day ain't over. I know you got kids, Falcon, and I know where they are down in Colorado. I'll kill them, McAllister. I'll make certain none of your stinking offspring lives. They're dead, McAllister, you hear me? Your kids is dead!
A hired gun suddenly left cover and tried to make the side door to the general store. The man stumbled and went down to his knees.
I'm done, McAllister. I'm out of here. I'm holstering my guns and getting my horse riding out. Don't shoot, you hear me?
Me too. This is crazy. I ain't gonna die for no damn Noonan. I'm joining Peter right now. Don't shoot.
You yellow-bellied bastards. I've been paying you top wages for months, and now you turn yellow on me. You stand and fight, you scum.
You go to hell, Noonan. It's time, past time. You understand that you ain't gonna win this fight. And I ain't having no part of killing nobody's kids.
That goes double for me. I'm done here, McAllister. My guns is in leather. I'm through. I'm heading out the back alley and riding clear of this town. You understand?
Get gone, then. All of you want to live? Ride out, don't never come back to this part of the country. If I ever see any of you again, I'll kill you on the spot. Ride out and don't come back. Hold your fire, boys. Let them ride clear.
You sorry bunch of yellow coyotes! You no good scummy bastards! Take a man's money and then turn yellow on him! God damn you all to hell!
Hey, how about it, Nance? You and me in the street. You have the nerve to face me man to man, you sorry piece of crap! Nance! Face me!
We're out of here, McAllister! We're done with this fight! There's five of us riding out! Hold your fire!
10 of us. That about does it, McAllister. Tell you boys it's all over. We're through and done with it.
Where's Nance?
He rode out a few minutes ago. He quit. Him and all his brothers and other kin with him. We ain't staying here taking no lead for him.
Right out then. But don't none of you never come back. You're dead if you do, you understand?
Stumpy, where's Stegman?
Gone. I seen him ride out before any of the others left.
Anybody know where the doc is? Puma?
Nah, at the church, I think. I'm closest. I'll go get him.
Well, take that damn cat of yours with you.
Hey, she's back in the hills. I seen her hightailing it after that no-count scared her, and she had to defend herself. Poor baby, scared to death, probably.
Big Bob had nothing to add to that.
Oh, shut up about that damn beast of yours and go get the doc.
You just don't appreciate God's creatures, Bob. They're wonderful critters.
Go get the damn doctor!
All right, keep your pants on, Bob. I'm going.
John Bailey and several other men came walking cautiously from the church to the main street, rifles at the ready. But they didn't need the weapons. The fight was over. It had not lasted long, but it had been brutal and bloody. 28 hired guns were dead or close to death. Another 15 had suffered various wounds. Most of the dead and wounded sprawled in the dirt of the town's main street. The Lord's own judgment painted the street red. Puma came back with the doc.
Good Lord.
So it's all over, right?
It's over. When the news of this spreads, Noonan and Stegman won't be able to hire any guns. Anyone with a pistol for hire will stay far away from this part of the country. Count on that.
Hell!
I'm gone, then. I gotta find my Jenny. Poor thing, scared and alone up yonder in the hills.
I owe you money, Puma.
No, last week was payday, and I ain't done nothing the past week. We're even. See you, boys.
And with that, the mountain man was gone, swinging into the saddle and riding out without looking back.
That's his way. I've known him for years, and he always leaves the same way. Just saddles up and goes, usually without so much as a fare thee well.
I hope Jenny's all right.
Big Bob rolled his eyes and shook his head.
You folks go on and have your social. Me and the boys will help the doc and the undertaker get all this cleared up. Go on back to your woman folk before some of them wander down here and see all this bloody mess.
You got a point there, Falcon. All right, come on, John. The bidding on them box suppers is going to be starting for long, and I don't want no one else to get what Mrs. Carter fixed.
The bodies of the dead were carried off for a quick burial. The town's gravediggers would be working through the night. The wounded were taken to the doc's office. Most of those suffering from less serious wounds dumped on the boardwalk in front of the office. The doc would get to them when he could. Big Bob laid down the law to the less seriously wounded men.
Soon as you yahoos is ready to ride, and that better be within a few hours, you plant your butt in the saddle and get gone from this town. I don't never want to see none of you again.
You don't have to worry about that. Once I get gone, I stay gone.
I hope so.
Falcon walked up leading his horse.
Falcon, where are you off to?
I got things to settle with Nance Noonan. He made his brags about what he was going to do. I aim to see he doesn't do them.
I'll get my horse and go with you.
No, boys. You stay here until John Bailey gets him a few permanent hands hired.
Wildcat noticed then that Falcon had tied a bedroll behind the saddle and his saddlebags were bulging with supplies.
Dane opened a general store for me and I stocked up with what I'll need on the trail. I met with Willard, and he knows what to do with the money.
No goodbyes for John Bailey and his family?
Nope. John will understand. I'll write him a letter once I get back to Colorado and make certain my kids are all right.
The men shook hands all around.
Good luck with your new lives, boys. I might drift back up this way one of these days.
That was probably a lie, and the mountain men all knew it.
See you, boy.
Falcon sat his saddle for a moment, smiling at his friends. Then he turned Hell's Head and rode out of town, out of the people's lives. He didn't look back. The town doctor joined the mountain men, wiping his hands on a bloody apron.
I didn't like that man when he first arrived in town, but I soon learned that first impressions can be wrong. He's a spitting image of his pa, that's for sure. Behaves just like Jamie, too. Them Noonans is gonna be mighty sorry when Falcon McAllister catches up with them.
Takes a sorry son of a bitch to threaten to kill somebody's kids. I don't believe I ever heard anybody say they were deliberately setting out to kill children.
That's low for a fact. I got me an idea, boys. I got me an idea on how to finish Nance Noonan's little empire. You boys interested?
Sure. If it'll help Falcon, let's do it.
Well, now, it might involve breaking the law, sorta.
Oh, my. How awful. My goodness, Bob. Now, how could you even think of doing anything that might be against the law?
Well, excuse me. Gather around here, boys. We're gonna have us some hard riding to do in a few minutes. This is what we're gonna do.
Somebody rustled the entire N/N herd that night, set Stegman's 44 herd into a wild stampede, running the cattle all over three counties. The men Noonan had left to guard the herd offered no resistance to the rustlers. A range detective later told the court of law that he'd heard that a group of men rode up to the herd early that night. They talked with the cowboys for a moment. It appeared that some money exchanged hands. And then the N/N cowboys rode off and were never seen again. and neither was Noonan's herd. The Nance Noonan Empire was crushed, utterly destroyed in one night. Stegman's little domain was likewise trampled into the dust of northern Wyoming. The two men who were once cattle kingpins with dreams of starting a kingdom all their own were ruined financially. And to make matters worse, they had Falcon McAllister dogging their back trail with blood in his eyes. Nance Noonan's wife had left him years back. Rod Stegman had sent his wife to visit friends in San Francisco the week before the slaughter in town. Rod had given her ample funds to see her through any hard times, which was good thinking on Stegman's part, because she was never going to see her husband or brothers again. Nance and his brothers and sons, and Stegman and his brothers and sons, were camped about 25 miles from town when a lone hand who decided to stay loyal to Brand rode in with the news of their herds.
We still got some cattle being held in other places. There ain't neither one of us totally ruined.
Stegman looked at his brother-in-law without speaking. Nance just didn't get it. They were finished. They were dead men. Nobody made threats to a McAllister and lasted for long. Falcon would find them both and kill them. It wouldn't make any difference if Nance was to get down on his hands and knees and beg for mercy and forgiveness. Falcon would just shoot him right between the eyes and walk off. And it didn't make one bit of difference that Rod hadn't been there when Nance made his threats, or even if Rod would ride off now and turn his back on Nance Noonan. Not one damn bit of difference in the world.
Should have stayed where we were. We had it made, and didn't have sense enough to realize it.
Jack Noonan walked over to the coffee pot and poured himself a cup.
Me and the boys been talking, Rod. We figure we can take over to that Colorado town where them McAllisters is settled. What do you think about that?
Rod Stegman just stared at Noonan. The man was a bigger fool than he looked.
I've been told them McAllister women is fine-looking. Blonde-headed and big-titted, all of them. Gets me excited just thinking about it.
How's your wife, Jack?
Ugly.
Jack Noonan went down to the ground in a lifeless heap, front of his shirt bloody. Rod Stegman hit the ground and rolled behind a mound of earth.
Falcon McAllister. It didn't take long for the bastard to find us. Douse them fires!
One of the Stegman cousins sat down hard on the ground, both hands pressing against his bloody stomach. The fires were killed and the camp went dark.
McAllister! Leave us be, man! You've done meant us! We ain't got nothing but the clothes on our backs! Go on and let us be!
Shut up your damn begging, Rod, or I'll shoot you myself!
You go to hell, Nance. My life means more to me than a little bit of pride. I think you're crazy. You and that damn flapping mouth of yours is what brought all this mess down on us.
Shut up your face, Rod, you yellow coyote!
Some 100 yards from the camp, lying on a knoll, Falcon listened to the exchange and smiled. He couldn't catch all the words, but enough of them to know that those in camp were falling apart. Falcon backed off the knoll and walked to his horse. He mounted up and rode away. He'd done all he could do for this night. Tomorrow was going to be another day. Rod looked over at the dark shape of his cousin still sitting on the ground.
Damn, Jack's dead. Getting cold already.
Wrap him in his blankets, Wardo. We'll bury him in the morning and say some words.
Say some words? To the good Lord. He ain't going to listen to anything we have to say.
McAllister's gone. I heard his horse a few seconds ago. He's heading south from here.
Then let's head north and see if we can lose that crazy man. What do you think, Rod?
I think we're dead men. All of us. Falcon McAllister ain't never gonna quit hunting us until the last man is down.
The last one of us ain't gonna be in the ground anytime soon. Tomorrow at first light, we're gonna start hunting Falcon. The odds is on our side that we'll get him. Hell, we got him outnumbered by 25 or 30 men.
All right, Nance. We'll try it your way come first light.
I want 4 men on guard at all times. Work out a schedule and get in position. If we don't, Falcon will circle around and pick us off one at a time. The son of a bitch is worse than a damn stinking engine.
Idiots. Maybe I could slip away and get gone from this pack of fools.
Don't be thinking of taking your kid and slipping away, Rod. You're in this same as the rest of us, to the end.
To hell with you, Nance! I'm done taking orders from you.
Me and my kin is through with all this craziness. This thing between you and Falcon is nothing but revenge now. It's stupid. It ain't gonna solve nothing one way or the other.
You bracing me now, Rod?
You bet I am, Nance. Yeah, I am. I'm done. At first light, me and mine are pulling out and you and yours can go ride straight to hell. Cause that's where you're heading real quick if you keep on moving toward Colorado with doing harm to Falcon's kids on your mind. I ain't having no part of hurting no more kids. I'm through with it, and I'm through with you.
Both men were conscious of their kin moving around, lining up alongside one or the other of the two men who were facing each other in the light of the moon holding water.
And I say you're with me to the end of this game.
Go to hell, Nance.
No man talks to me like that.
Forget it, Nance. Just forget it. That's it, boys. We're out of here tonight. Pack it up and let's get going.
You'll die here before you walk out on me. Drag iron, you coward.
Nance went for his gun and Rod did the same. Both men were reasonably fast on the draw, but this time Nance was a hair faster. Nance shot his brother-in-law in the chest. Rod went down, falling backward and landing flat on his back on the ground. His legs trembled once, and then he was still.
You son of a bitch! You killed Rod!
The gunfight was over in only a few seconds. The Noonan crew had the Stegman crew outnumbered and outgunned, and it was a massacre. When the smoke had cleared, Nance looked at the lifeless form of his brother-in-law.
We're better off without you assholes anyway. You 44 men that can still walk, drag your dead out of here and keep on going. I don't never want to see none of you again. If Stegman owed you money, you're shit out of luck.
Long after what was left of the 44 outfit had dragged their dead off and saddled up and got gone, Nance sat in the dark and sipped his coffee. His thoughts were hate-filled.
Kill all them damn McAllisters, every one of them! God damn Falcon McAllister to hell! I'll burn that damn town to the ground. That's what I'll do.
Several miles away near a river, Falcon rolled up in his blankets and dropped off to sleep. He didn't worry about anyone sneaking up on him, not with his big horse Hell picketed close by.
It'll be good to see family again.
When Nance rolled out of his blankets the next morning, he found that half a dozen of his own kin had quietly packed up their few possessions and slipped away during the night, taking off for safer parts. The move really didn't surprise him much. He looked out past the camp. The bodies of Rod Stegman and his men had been dragged out a few dozen yards and covered with rocks and brush. He felt no emotion at the loss of his brother-in-law. The only emotion Nance was experiencing was the one involving his someday killing Falcon McAllister. That hatred filled him with a great deal of satisfaction. Nance didn't notice that he and his men were stinking and filthy, their clothing dirty and soiled. He didn't notice that they all looked like a bunch of bums. He didn't care about going back and trying to round up his cattle and starting over. He just wanted to kill Falcon McAllister and the man's kids. Nance Noonan had slipped over the line into the darkness of insanity. The only brothers he had left, Penrod and Hodge, were watching him closely. They knew something was wrong with their brother, but they didn't know what. Neither of them was smart enough to understand it was insanity that had taken over. They would figure that out before too much longer.
He'll be coming round the mountain when he comes. Bam, bam. He'll be coming round the mountain when he comes. Bam, bam. Oh, the Falcon's flying high till I shoot him in the eye. He'll be sailing down the mountain into the deep ground.
Nance sat on the ground long after the sun had edged over the horizon. He drew strange symbols in the dirt while his kin waited for him to tell him to mount up and ride. But Nance was slipping deeper into the world of madness. He was no longer capable of telling anybody anything that would make any sense. Most of Nance's cousins saddled up their horses and rode out without saying a word to Nance. Penrod and Hodge and the few kin who were left made no attempt to stop them. Nance's brothers began talking, and they were talking about Nance. Nance, he didn't hear them, or if he did hear the words, they didn't register in his sick mind. One of Nance's cousins walked over to him and slipped his guns out of leather. Nance didn't even notice. He continued to draw those strange symbols in the dirt. Occasionally, he would look around him with eyes that were strangely vacant. Nance soiled himself, peeing in his already dirty underwear. That was what finally got through to Penrod and Hodge.
He's gone crazy, Penrod. I seen an old boy lose his marbles one time. He acted just like Nance is acting.
What are we gonna do?
Hell, I don't know.
Only a few miles away to the south, Falcon had fixed his breakfast, packed up his gear, and was riding back toward the camp of Nance and his N/N crew. He had made up his mind to finish this little war that day. Hell ate up the distance, moving Falcon closer to what he thought would be a showdown. It would be, but not the kind he had imagined. At the campsite, Penrod walked over to his brother and shook him by the shoulder.
Nance, we better get moving now, boy. You hear me, brother?
Nance didn't look up. His brother's words were nothing but a roaring in his head.
Nance, we got to do something, boy. We got to move out of here. It's time to go.
Penrod walked away from his brother and sat down a few yards distant. He rolled a cigarette and smoked it, then rolled and smoked another one. He didn't know what the hell to do. He couldn't just leave his brother out in the middle of nowhere. Penrod looked around the camp at the others. At that moment, he saw them all, including himself, for what they really were. They were filthy and nasty, and they all needed a good, long, hot bath. Some of them more than one.
Look at us! Pitiful! We sure don't look like much.
You sure as hell don't.
What?
Falcon stood only a few yards away. Heads turned, eyes wide in surprise that anyone could slip up on him that easily. Falcon stood there, both hands filled with .44s.
Unbuckle your gun belts and kick them away from you. And if you want to die, just touch a gun and I'll start shooting. That's better. Now then, what's wrong with Nance?
Something's gone bad in his head. He's real sick, McAllister. We gotta get him to a doctor.
Falcon looked at Nance. The man was slobbering down the front of his shirt. Falcon could smell the stink of him from where he stood. It was rank.
A doctor won't be able to do Nance any good. Just commit your brother to an asylum.
Reckon where one of them is.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm gonna do with you either.
We done hunting you, McAllister. That was all Nance's idea anyway. Yeah, we went along with it because he was the boss. But he ain't nothing no more. He's gone.
Falcon couldn't argue that. Falcon looked at each member of the Noonan clan. They were a sorry-looking bunch. All the fight was gone from them. They were finished. There was no doubt in Falcon's mind.
All right, pack up your possibles and get Nance on a horse. There's bound to be some sort of asylum for the insane down at the Capitol. Take him down there. But hear me good, boys. Stay clear of Colorado. If I see any of you there, I'll kill you. I won't say a word to you. I'll just shoot you where you stand. You understand all that? I'll leave your 6 guns where they are and ride out of here. Keep your rifles to hunt meat. Now move. Get gone right now.
The Noonan clan was gone in 5 minutes. Out of sight, headed for the Capitol. All but one. Nance Noonan sat at saddle and peed his underwear. Falcon walked out from the camp to look at the hastily covered bodies of Rod Stegman and his kin. Coyotes had already been working on them during the night, pulling away the branches and small logs and moving the rocks to get at the bodies. Falcon looked up into the sky. Great black carrion birds were gathering, slowly circling in patient expectation of something to eat. It was over. Several weeks later, Falcon rode into McAllister's Valley just about an hour before dawn. He topped the ridge and sat his saddle, looking down at the town his parents had founded so many years ago. It appeared to have grown even since he'd been gone. Falcon rode slowly into town, avoiding the main street and up to the livery stable. There was no one in sight. The liveryman was probably having breakfast. Falcon stabled his horse and rubbed him down and was forking some hay for him when the stableman walked in.
Well, Mr. McAllister, Lord have mercy, but it's been a while since I seen you.
Jake, you be careful around this horse. He'll hurt you.
Hey, I can tell that just by looking at him. I warned Maxwell to stay clear of him.
You do that. You see my kids, Jake? I bet they've grown about a foot since I've been gone.
Why, your children are in St. Louis, Mr. McAllister, attending a private school. Your sisters thought that was best for them some months back.
I see. Well, my sisters probably know best. I'll get me some breakfast and then be over at the Wild Rose.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. McAllister. I'll take good care of your horse.
Falcon slipped in the back door of the cafe to avoid seeing any townspeople. He just didn't feel up to that at the moment. The cook spotted him, and Falcon held up a warning hand. The cook nodded his head in understanding. Falcon took his breakfast in the storeroom and ate alone. Shortly thereafter, he used his key to open the back door of his saloon, one of the finest and best furnished in the state. He made his way through the darkness to his office. He lit the lanterns and opened the windows, airing out the large room. Then he made a pot of coffee. While the coffee was brewing, he washed up and shaved, then changed clothes, choosing one of the suits he always kept in a closet in his office. Falcon poured himself a huge mug of coffee and sat at his desk for a time, his thoughts busy.
I don't belong here anymore. I don't know why that is, but I can feel it. It's all wrong for me somehow. The valley has turned sour for me.
One of the swampers came into the saloon.
Hello? Someone here? Hello? Oh, shit!
Swamper was momentarily startled to find Falcon sitting in his office at his desk drinking coffee alone.
Morning. Pour yourself some coffee. Pull up a chair. Tell me what's been happening since I've been gone.
Well, sir, your brother, Jamie Ian, has gone to Denver for a time. Something about banking business and statehood or something like that there. Two of your sisters, Jolene and Mary Kathleen, have gone to San Francisco for something or other. I ain't real sure the why-fors of that trip.
The man drank his coffee and brought Falcon up to date on his family in the town. The more the man talked, the more Falcon realized that he just didn't fit into Valley anymore. He was out of place. Something had happened to him during the time he'd been gone. The town was the same, but Falcon had changed. Long after the swamper had finished his coffee and began cleaning up the saloon, Falcon sat in his office and entertained his thoughts. He wasn't real sure what he should do, but he knew one thing for certain. He wasn't going to stay in town for any length of time. He would see to some business, visit his brothers and sisters, and then drift. His mind was made up about that. No point in staying in a place where you don't feel you belong. Falcon went out the back door and walked the back streets to the livery stable. There he saddled him a horse and rode up to his parents' gravesite. It was clean and had a profusion of flowers planted all around. The McAllister kids saw to that. The grandkids weren't so attentive. Probably the next generation after them might come up every year or so, if that often.
Maybe that's the way it should be. Time doesn't stand still. It's constantly moving. People changing with it.
Falcon stood by the graves for a few moments, then put his hat back on his head. A new hat that he'd bought in a town on the way back home.
Home. No, for some reason I can't explain. This ain't home anymore. I have a business here, I have a ranch here, I have a family here. This just ain't home for me any longer.
Falcon turned away from the graves and mounted up, riding out to his ranch. There he talked to the foreman for about an hour, then rode back into town. He didn't worry about the ranch, for his older brother, Jamie Ian, would see to paying all of the bills and the payroll and so forth, just as he'd been doing for a year now. He spent the rest of the day visiting with those brothers and sisters who were in town. The next day, he bought supplies and picked out a pack horse from his own stock at the ranch. He'd told his brothers and sisters that he was going to hit the trail. They would see him when they saw him. The next morning, Falcon pulled out before dawn, heading south. He was going to check out New Mexico. He hadn't been there in many years. As he put more distance between himself and the town, Falcon felt a load being lifted from him. He came to a brief stop beside a cactus. He knew he wasn't cut out to stay in one place for long. He was a wanderer. Maybe someday he'd settle down again. Maybe. But the way he felt at the moment, he doubted it. He'd seen a lot of country, but he wanted to see more. He wanted to see the Pacific Ocean again, and he wanted to see the deserts. He wasn't looking for trouble, and he hoped he wouldn't run into any. He just wanted to wander for a time, maybe for a long time. He smiled as he thought of Big Bob Marsh and Jack Stump enforcing the law in the town of Gilman. There damn sure wouldn't be any trouble in that town as long as those two were wearing the badges and keeping order. And as wild and woolly as those two were, once they took that oath, they would be arrow straight.
All right, Hale, old hoss. Let's you and me go see what's over that next hill. Yeah!
Rage of Eagles is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1998, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Vanessa Benjamin, Michael Glenn, Kate Torrey, Sonny Lasky, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Tim Carlin, Christopher Graybill, and James Lewis. Red Shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Vocal editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Rage of Eagles, be sure to look for our other graphic audio titles, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com.
All right, let's see what's on TV tonight. Survivor, no. American Idol, no. Donald Trump, no. Tennis, no. Ooh, wrestling.
Sick and tired of what's on TV these days? Try Graphic Audio. www.graphicaudio.net. Oh yeah.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Outlanders number 5, Parallax Red. Kane stood in the doorway, bare-chested, shirt around his neck, his features set and drawn into a grim mask. Rauch gazed at Kane boldly, her eyes resting for a long time on his groin. She was curious as to whether the sight of her naked would move him at all. As she waited for a reaction, Kane gave her a glance, but saved his intense stare for Bridget.
Baptiste, we need to talk. Alone.
For a long moment, no one moved. Then, languorously, Rauch rose to her feet, made a deliberately slow show of unwrapping the towel from her hair and dropping it to the tiles. Hips swinging, her eyes on Kane, she sauntered over to the shelves and pulled down a robe. She took a provocatively long time putting it on. The words, gaudy slut, leapt unbidden into Bridget's mind, but she managed to keep them from her tongue, just barely. As Rauch padded barefoot past Kane, one of her long fingernails traced a line on his arm.
Let's do dinner. Or breakfast.
For the first time, Kane took notice of the woman. with a swift, slightly irritated flash of the eyes. They were eyes that appraised Rauch, yet were already focused on something else.
I understand DeFore expected you to talk to me about being fused out.
Brigid stared up at him, feeling his anger, but too busy wrestling with her own to address it.
Do you know why Rauch is here?
No, and I really don't care. Why didn't
She's here to mate with you, to improve the breed of Cerberus exiles.
Kane was astonished. He turned to look at the doors Rauch had just walked through.
Really? Nobody told me.
She would have gotten around to it eventually.
She told you that?
And a lot more. First, she wanted to know if you and I were involved. Not that it would make any difference to her, she told me. It's all business, though she isn't above mixing a little pleasure with it.
I don't want to talk about that. DeFore said...
Will you?
Will I what?
I hate it when you're obtuse. Answer my question.
You answer mine.
You didn't ask me one.
That's because you didn't give me the chance. DeFore told you that I was fused out.
That's not a question.
God damn it, let's stay on the subject.
Brigid lifted her feet out of the pool. She grabbed a towel and furiously began drying her hair.
Fine. I suppose it makes perfect sense, Lakesh continuing to practice his own version of purity control. It would have been polite to have briefed us on what he had in mind, but then we're just an ex-archivist and an ex-mag, exiles all.
Kane gazed at her, finally reacting to the unmistakable edge of barely repressed fury and hurt in her voice.
You're jealous. For God's sake, Baptiste, you're jealous. You're acting like a...
A woman. That's what you were going to say. I'm acting like a woman.
He shifted his feet uncomfortably.
Well, you are.
She stooped quickly to pick up the towel that Rauch had dropped, then stood again, pitched it into a hamper, and continued to dry off, all in one smooth, continuous movement. The grace of the motion gave a slight hint of the athlete's coordination within her slender frame. Kane couldn't help but gaze at her admiringly. He had seen her nude before, under other circumstances, but the brief brassiere and panties she wore struck him as arousing. His thoughts whipped back to that night months before in Cobaltville when he had first met her. He had recognized her as a truly beautiful woman then, and he recognized the same woman now. Brigid's slim body was rounded and curved, long in the leg. Her full breasts strained at the fabric of her brassiere, and the wet cloth of her panties was plastered to the soft, honey-blonde triangle at the juncture of her thighs. But she radiated a beauty far deeper than the physical, an energy that triggered a melancholy longing in his soul. That strange, sad longing only deepened after a bout of jump sickness both of them suffered during the Matran's jump to Russia. The main symptoms of jump sickness were vivid, almost real hallucinations. He and Brigid had shared the same hallucination, but both knew on a visceral, primal level it hadn't been gateway-triggered delirium, but a revelation that they were joined by chains of fate, their destinies linked. They never spoke of it, though Kane often wondered if that spiritual bond was the primary reason he had sacrificed everything he had attained as a magistrate to save her from execution. Kane didn't like that melancholia, so over the past 6 months he worked very hard at burying it, at rerouting all of the repressed passions he felt toward Brigid. But the melancholy filled him like a cup, and he pushed her away before the sadness overflowed to such a degree he would never be able to contain it again. A few weeks before, when Kane had protested to Morrigan that there was nothing between him and Brigid, the Irish telepath had laughed at him.
Oh, yes, there is. Between you two, there is much to forgive, much to understand, much to live through. Always together. She's your Anamkara.
In ancient Gaelic, Anamkara meant soul friend. Kane found Brigid's intelligence, her iron resolve, her wellspring of compassion, and the way she had always refused to be intimidated by him, not just stimulating, but inspiring. She was a complete person, her heart, mind, and spirit balanced and demanding of respect. Only a few days ago, when cornered by Salvo's questions about his reasons for sacrificing everything for a woman, he could think of only one clumsily phrased response.
Because I know her. Because I need her.
Brigid reached down to pick up her bodysuit, shouldering Kane aside.
I'm sorry. I have no right to give you hell about Rauch.
Well, that's for sure. Direct it toward Lakesh.
I don't have the right to give it to him either. objectively, his reasoning is sound. I have no hold over you.
Cain frowned, not liking what she said, but unable to dredge up anything to refute it. He reached a hand out toward her, but Bridget turned her back and stepped into the bodysuit.
DeFore did mention to me that she was worried about your emotional stability. The coma you suffered after the Irish op threw a scare into her. She's afraid you'll develop a full-blown psychosis. She interpreted your insistence on taking Salvo with us to New York as evidence of that. She thinks that was the reason the mission failed.
She might be right. Maybe my instincts can't be trusted anymore.
If the mission to change history failed, it had nothing to do with your instincts or Salvo. We gained important data from it. We now know the true purpose behind Operation Kronos.
Why didn't you tell me about DeFore's worries when I first suggested bringing Salvo along?
Bridget's green eyes gleamed strangely in the dim light.
What good would it have done, except make you doubt yourself? She doesn't know you. Doesn't know that you're at your best when faced with seemingly impossible challenges.
And you know that?
I do. DeFore thinks you have a deluded self-image, that you believe yourself to be a Superman, glorying in your power over life or death.
I seem to recall you saying much the same thing on occasion.
I was referring to your magistrate's persona. I can see beneath it.
And what's there, Baptiste?
A lonely and frightened man who was doing a job that needs doing. That doesn't make you fused out, Cain. It makes you human. I just saw no reason to mention that DeFore diagnosed you as human.
Cain swallowed the hot lump swelling in his throat, felt his heart thud within his chest. He felt the familiar longing ache and tried to bottle it. Bridget stepped around him toward the doors.
Baptiste?
Yes?
You were wrong about one thing.
What's that?
About your having no hold over me.
Bridget said nothing, but inclined her head in a short nod.
Mark Dalton doesn't look for trouble.
Joey!
But trouble seems to know exactly where to find him.
You! You're the one!
What are you going to do?
I don't know. What do you think they're going to do?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and I don't want to know.
Don't give me that crap after your reckless driving put my friend in the hospital.
Hey, what you think you're doing?
All right, you can come out now.
I know what you did, and I'm here to even the score.
Do you think these guys are good with their fists?
Don't play stupid with me. You heard what I said.
Just keep driving.
Where do you think you're going?
I'm getting in my truck and getting the hell out of here. If you're smart, you'll step aside and let me go.
Well, I guess it's showtime. Mark Dalton, owner-operator, coming soon from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.